Welcome to Vital Voices. This is the first of two programs on the life and legacy of Edith Bowling Wilson, the second wife of President Woodrow Wilson. She is often referred to as America's first woman president and the secret president. After President Wilson suffered a serious stroke in October of 1919, Edith stepped in to run many of the daily affairs of the White House. She called it a stewardship, an unofficial assignment that lasted until President Wilson's second term ended in March of 1921. Today, we'll learn about Edith Bowling Wilson's early life in Wytheville, Virginia, where she was born October 15, 1872. President Wilson's first wife had died in 1914. Edith's first husband, Washington, D.C. jeweler Norman Galt, died in 1908. Woodrow Wilson and Edith Bowling Galt married on December 18, 1915. Edith's last visit to her hometown of Wytheville was in 1960 for the dedication of a stained glass window at St. John's Episcopal Church. She is memorialized at the Edith Bowling Wilson Birthplace Museum on East Main Street in Wytheville. And our guest today is the museum's Dr. Adam Manuel. Take me back to Wytheville, Virginia in the 1870s when Edith was a little girl. What was this community like?
Well, when Edith was a little girl, Wytheville was a very rural community, as it still is for the most part. Her father was a circuit court judge here in the town, so he was involved in the community quite a bit. But he was the prestigious individual in the community. Wytheville has always been mostly geared toward growing livestock and farming and things like that. Over the years, it's developed more, but for the most part, it was just a very close-knit community. There was a lot of, there's all kinds of churches here in the town, so the church was very important in the family.
Describe where we're sitting right now and what this space would have been like when Edith was a girl.
Well, when Edith was a girl, this building here was already a little about 20 to 30 years old. The building is a brick building that downstairs has always been a very business-oriented place. The family had the run of the upstairs, and it's not just directly above where the museum sits, but from the directly above the museum all the way to the end of the building. So the family had a large space to run around and move, and even though the 20 people lived there, there was plenty enough space for the large family that lived there.
And if you're standing on the sidewalk now and you're looking at the building, it's a bit deceiving because the building looks taller than the actual space included.
Yes, there's a lot of depth to the building, not necessarily height.
Describe your own personal interest in Edith, how that got started, and what you do here in this job every day.
Okay, well, I grew up here in Wytheville, so I'm a local citizen, obviously, growing up here. I didn't actually hear about Edith until I was graduating high school in 2008 when the museum opened. It was the beginning stages of the museum, and actually I, as a young boy, did come here and visit the museum in its early stages. Then I go off to college, and every now and then I would come here and visit, and I've seen the evolution of it in various stages. About 4 years ago, there was an available position here. I applied, and they hired me, and I've been working here since. Edith's story is very fascinating to me. She goes beyond what was traditionally expected of a woman of the period and does many things that show that she had a great deal of independence and can-do determination just to get things done. And you see that in a lot of the things that she does with Woodrow.
One of the fascinating things I learned in reading Rebecca Boggs Roberts' book, among a lot of things, is the fact that this building was once populated by a bunch of canaries.
Yes.
Explain that.
Yeah, Grandmother Bowling loved canaries. She brought them with her when the family moved in here in 1866. There were 26 of them. It was Edith's job to take care of those little birds. Edith didn't necessarily enjoy the process, but one thing that the children enjoy doing is a bit morbid to think about it, but when one of the little birds died, Edith and her brothers and sisters would get together and have a full little funeral for the bird. Her brother would say a little prayer for the bird, and then they'd bury it in the bird cemetery in the backyard, and then they'd go about their day. But it was a cute little way to remember this one little bird that they took care of.
Another bizarre thing, I think one of her grandmothers sat in a chair that was covered with dog skin.
Yes, it was that same Grandmother Bowling. She must have really loved that dog to have it made into a little carpet or whatever.
All right. Give me a virtual tour of this museum and point out, as we're sitting here, some of the major artifacts that the museum owns that relate to Edith's life.
Okay. Where we're sitting, directly to my left, one of the most interesting items, in my opinion, is her driver's license. Edith was known to have driven an electric car. People today think electric cars are new, but in reality, they have been around for at least 100 years or more, just coming in and out of existence during that time. But she was a licensed operator of that vehicle, and we have her preserved license here in the museum. In front of me, there are all kinds of different items from throughout her life. There's family Bibles. We have several family Bibles that record marriages and deaths and things like that. We have her mother's Bible, which records the birth and death of all of her children. So Edith was seventh of 11 children. So that's a very large record to keep, and we cherish those items. Another thing nearby is there's a cutout here of where some of the original wallpaper and the foundation of the building is for people to view. Because we do get people here to the museum who are more architecturally inclined in that way, and they enjoy seeing the craftsmanship that went into these old buildings and stuff like that. And one of the last major items, in my opinion, is behind me is the cradle. That cradle is more than 150 years old, used by Edith's mother for all of her 11 children. Then after Edith's mother was no longer having children, she gives that cradle to a woman who was actually a former slave of the family. But after the Civil War, she gets her freedom, stays on with the family, and she gets that cradle, uses it for her own 7 children, passes it through her family line, and then it's sold to a woman here in Withfield for about $15. And the story follows with that cradle. It's in the woman's home and cherished for decades. And when the museum opens in 2008, it's donated to the museum. So it's in many ways the original home after all these years.
We have one recording, as far as we know, of Edith Bowling Wilson's voice from 1949. Describe the situation.
Yes. So what happened was, it was later in Edith's life. She was donating things of her husband's to various organizations. She had 10 years previous donated a collection of his writings to the Library of Congress. But in 1949, she donated 9,000 books and memorabilia from his life. And for a long time, the museum had been looking for some kind of recording of her voice. But last summer, a man from Georgia contacted the museum. And he stated that as a young man, he was doing his own personal research into Woodrow and stuff like that. And he remembered a footnote that said that Edith was at the Library of Congress in 1949 donating those 9,000 books, and it was recorded. So I instantly jumped on it, contacted the Library of Congress, they verified it, and they sent us the recording. She speaks the last 1 minute of the audio recording.
Yeah.
And that's the recording that she will hear.
This is Edith Bowling Wilson, recorded at the Library of Congress in 1949.
It gives me great pleasure to formally present the Library of Congress, the personal library of my husband, Woodrow Wilson, to be maintained as a perpetual memorial to his memory. I feel confident that this library represents the source from which he drew much of his courage and inspiration for the high ideals he gave to the world in such abundant measure.
That's quite a treasure, quite a find.
Let's get into her beliefs a little more. People might find it strange to learn that she did not advocate for women's suffrage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many people find that interesting. She was in some ways kind of private about her personal views regarding that in some ways. She was brought up by two very personality-wise, very interesting and different grandmothers. Grandmother Bowling instilled in Edith the can-do attitude of there's no such thing as you can't do it. Mm-hmm. You can do it. And then her other grandmother instilled in Edith a very strong etiquette value and how one presents themselves in society and stuff like that. So when it comes to women's right to vote, Edith, when she was asked about that opinion, she would usually say something along the lines of there are better ways to achieve the right to vote. A woman needs to be acting more like a lady. And most of that was talking about in connection with how many of these women were standing outside her husband's White House yelling and complaining and about him not giving them the right to vote.
Let's talk about what happened after President Woodrow Wilson's stroke. Edith is often referred to as the secret president or the first woman president as well. Describe the types of decisions that she had to make as First Lady that he was initially incapable of handling after that stroke.
In many ways, Edith was acted as like a gatekeeper of information. So if someone wanted to speak to the president, she would have to be first notified. So she was initially just determining who can see her husband. She was very influential in creating just this situation in the White House where people had to first come to her, and she determined what was most important for him to address. When he first had his stroke, best doctors were notified, and she was told that his mind was there, just physically he could not deal with the stress that he was facing at the time. So she would just basically make certain decisions that allowed him time to contemplate certain things. As far as we know, she didn't make any actual legal steps or decisions regarding his presidency, but she was definitely an influential figure in that White House.
When I first started coming here, probably 20 years ago, I knew the story of Edith Bowling Wilson, and I wondered why the town of Withfield didn't make more of it. Talk about the progress that's been made here in Withfield in giving Edith Bowling Wilson the kind of credit she deserved.
Well, in many ways, it is tied to Farron Smith. She purchased the building in 1989. She and her husband have been working very hard over the past few decades to try to get any publicity and attention to this very important location. She has been working tirelessly to just get people interested in a woman. I mean, there are only 8 museums in the United States in some way dedicated to a first lady. Some of them are more successful than others. Some of them focus on different aspects just to get more attention. But not all of them are on main streets, since located in the center of the town. But the work is ongoing, and we're constantly trying to get the attention. It's grown over the years. We're now seeing thousands and thousands of visitors a year. So the work that we are doing here is very successful. It's just there's still much that needs to be done, and I believe that the restoration that is currently going on upstairs will be a major component of bringing even more attention to the museum. And over the last few years, we've gained quite a bit of attention as well.
What are some things that you commonly hear from people who knew nothing about her history or this museum before they visited here?
Some people, when they come here, they say that they knew a little bit about Woodrow, but they don't, because of school and the way that schools are so rushed these days to get certain topics covered, and especially here in Virginia, where the SOLs require certain subjects covered, and by the end of the class, the teacher doesn't have time to go into more local history and more. Many people are just not as familiar with her as they are with her husband, and we try to bring that connection and say that Edith was very influential and important in his presidency.
Rebecca Boggs Roberts' book was published in 2023. What did that book do for Wytheville tourism?
Oh, it really boosted quite a bit of tourism here to the museum. And in fact, the day the book released, there was a woman that drove all the way from Pennsylvania just to see the museum. So it was quite amazing to us here that this woman would make this 5-hour or more journey just to see a museum that up to that point she had never heard of. So,
and didn't Edith write a memoir?
Yes, Edith wrote an autobiography in 1939. It was called My Memoir. She kept it simple. but it covers her whole life up to about 1924 when Woodrow passes away. There were three chapters that were not included in the original version of that book, and the museum has the rights to those chapters. One day we hope to republish that autobiography, and that'll give even more in-depth information about Edith that most people don't know about.
Do you have access to any letters that she and President Wilson exchanged?
Oh, yes, there's all kinds of letters between Edith and Woodrow. They're very telling. when Edith first started courting Woodrow, the first few letters, Woodrow's immediately talking about kissing her on the face and things like that. And Edith, the first few, was like, there's a war going on over there, buddy. Let's slow it down a little bit.
Dr. Adam Manuel, thank you for joining us for Vital Voices.
Well, thank you for having us, and I hope this is beneficial to your listeners.
From the Edith Bowling Wilson Birthplace Museum in Wytheville, Virginia, I'm Fred Sossman for Vital Voices.